Okay, we're going to look this afternoon at the dispensation of law, and depending on where the clock's at, because it shouldn't take us too long, we're doing just a survey, also look at the dispensation of grace briefly. The dispensation of law, remember, since we were off 1 week, we're just going to review in this that what we're looking at, and we could add other stuff to this, but what we're looking at in brief is that every dispensation has a steward, or put it in modern language, a manager. It also has a household, yeah. That household is given a rule. That's what the word dispensation means, is a house rule. Then we're also looking that every dispensation ends in a
failure.
And then there's a punishment. We actually, in the process, could look at what men learn, but really what they're learning is they're learning about the nature of man's failure under these different systems. And so we're going to start today in Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19, and it says in verse 9, Exodus 19 and 9, and the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I shall come to you in a thick cloud, in order that the people may hear when I speak with you, and may also believe in you forever." And then Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. So part of the reason that God was approaching them in this manner, and part of the reason he was talking with Moses, is so the people would say, hey, Moses is God's man. And they would recognize Moses as the one that God was giving the law through. So Moses, then, is the steward in this case. The household in this case, if you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4, we're going to put in here at verse 1. It says, "And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I am teaching you to do, in order that you may live and go in, take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I am commanding you, nor take away from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. Your eyes have seen what the Lord has done in the case of Baal Peor. For all the men who followed Baal Peor, the Lord your God has destroyed them from among you. But you have held fast to the Lord your God. But you who held fast to the Lord your God are alive today, every one of you. See, I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do thus in the land that you are entering to possess it. So keep and do, for that is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is wise and understanding. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it, as is the Lord our God, whenever we call on him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law, which I am setting before you today?" Very plainly, as you get to the end of this, it's clear this wasn't given to the other nations. So the household of the dispensation of law was Israel. It wasn't these other nations. The other nations are going to stand and say, what nation is there that has something that this nation has? Okay, this nation has something which is unusual. So the household in this case is Israel. By the way, excuse me. Back up in verse 2, it says, "You shall not add to the word which I am commanding you, nor take away from it." We were talking the other night, I think we were at supper, and we had Martinelli's sparkling cider. How many of you have Martinelli's sparkling cider for Christmas? We've had that since my aunt and uncle introduced that to us years ago, so we always have that for Christmas and sometimes New Year's. But on the back of it, it says kosher, and has a little symbol. And I pointed that out, and we were looking at it there, and so I think it was Emily asked, what does kosher mean? They say, well, it just means that they've had some Jewish officials have come through and they have looked over the place where this stuff is made, and they have approved that the stuff that's used in making it and all the equipment and everything, none of it violates kosher law. She says, well, is the Bible, does it talk about kosher law? I said, well, the Bible has some regulations, but I said, kosher law is way beyond that. God gave Israel a law, just as an illustration of this. God gave Israel a law in the Old Testament that says, you shall not boil a calf in its mother's milk. Okay? You're all familiar. You've probably read that at one time or another. Well, the kosher Jews, they went beyond that to the point that they said, well, they were afraid you might violate that rule of not boiling a calf in its mother's milk by maybe having a pot that had one little teeny bit of milk left in it that didn't fully get scoured out, and you might cook some beef in that, and it might end up boiling a calf in its mother's milk because it had a drop of milk in there. So they ended up having a rule that you had to have two, for strict kosher, you had to have two separate sets of cookware. In fact, some of them, you go into the kitchens, they have two separate portions of the kitchen, one for cooking things with beef and one for cooking things with milk, so that you never cross-contaminate anything because you don't want to break that law. Now, I believe those are examples of the fact that they weren't to add to this. And what they actually did was they made the law even more burdensome than God intended it to be, because they added so many other laws and regulations to the rule that God gave them. And that's just, like I said, one example. But there's all kinds of other examples that you could use. Remember, in the Old Testament, it did not forbid the Israelites from being around Gentiles. But when the Pharisaical system, which was going beyond what the law said, remember what the Pharisees had deemed was true for Israel in Paul's day, by the time Paul came along? Jews shouldn't even sit down at the table to eat with Gentiles. God had never told them that in their law. That was something they went beyond the law with because they so wanted to avoid eating anything wrong or any undue influence that they refused. They said it was against the law to sit. Remember, that was a big issue with Peter, because Peter sat and ate with Gentiles. So that's an aside. Turn to chapter 5 also here in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 5. This is also looking at the household, as we saw in chapter 4, what house. But notice what he says here in verse 1 of chapter 5. Then Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I am speaking today in your hearing, that you may learn them and observe them carefully. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, all those of us who are alive here today." Now what he's saying when he says our fathers, were their moms and dads part of the covenant? Yeah, because they were at Horeb. Okay, Sinai. Okay, it's what he's referring to. It doesn't call it Sinai, it calls it Horeb. But that was the place where they're in the Sinai Mountains. When it says our fathers, he's referring to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Did God make this covenant with them? No. So this covenant, so what we're saying is, for number one, that the household is Israel, but it's not all of Israel. It's that portion of Israel from the time they stood at Horeb up until the time that God brings that covenant to an end. So the Jews prior to Sinai weren't under this covenant. Very important thing, because a lot of people in Christendom today think that the law had always been around. Now turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6, and we want to look at the rule. What is the rule? Well, we probably could deduce it from these others, but because we've been seeing it reiterated in these other verses about keeping the law and the statutes and the commandments here. But in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "Now this is the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord our God has commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your son and your grandson may fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. O Lord, you should listen and be careful to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may be multiplied greatly, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey." The rule of life, quite simply, and this is the other thing to keep in mind, every one of these rules of life always has a promise with it, associated with it, that if they'd obey, there'd be a promise. Well, the promise for them is, if you'd obey the law, you can go into the land, you live in the land a long time, you'll be prosperous, you'll be healthy, you'll have lots of kids. That was the blessing of the law. And if they didn't do that, then all those things, the reverse would be true. And if you go to read towards the end of the book of Deuteronomy, in chapter 28, God goes over those things in the blessing and the cursing. See? Anyway. Okay. Any questions on this? Just trying to make sure. Now, the failure, Israel's failure under the law, I think really is delineated in Romans chapter 10. Turn over to Romans 10 for a moment. And because we're moving fast, I'm going to show you one other passage here in Romans that actually shows you where their failure is at. Romans chapter 10, let me find this other verse here in Romans 11, if I can find it here. Oh, there it is. Okay, I have that. Now, Romans chapter 10, thank you for your patience there. Romans chapter 10 and let's go to verse 1. Brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them, that is for Israel, is their salvation. One of the questions that had a couple people ask Ben Orth a couple weeks ago is it proper to pray for people's salvation? And Paul says right here, it's not only the good pleasure of his heart, but he also says it's his supplication. Now, supplication, remember, is a communication where you don't know what the outcome is going to be. Okay, you're just praying for God to act. And he says his supplication to God is on their behalf is salvation, verse 2. And I witness or I testify for them that they have a zeal with reference to God, but it's not a zeal according to knowledge. And what does he mean when he says they don't have a zeal according to knowledge? Well, I think he's going to explain that as he goes through this in verse 3. For being ignorant of God's righteousness, seeking to establish their own righteousness, they have not submitted to God's righteousness. In other words, remember what we just said about the Pharisees and the system of laws that they ended up coming up with? Because they didn't know the law itself, because they had all this other extraneous stuff attached to it, they'd begun to seek their own righteousness and establish, look at how good I am. I've got two sets of cookware, one for milk products, one for my meat. See, that's how good I am. Though that never established a person's righteousness under law by having two sets of cookware and things like that. So they took it to the extreme. And so they had a zeal for God, but it wasn't according to knowledge. In other words, they were very zealous of the law, but they didn't have knowledge behind all their zeal. They didn't have knowledge to say, yeah, God intended you to get two sets of cookware. No, he didn't intend that. Okay. Now, I don't know if in Jesus' day that it was that bad, but one of the things in Jesus' day that Jesus criticized the Jews for was that they had all these washing rules. Remember, God had rules for their washing and cleansing themselves. But Jesus criticized them that you guys spend all kinds of times worrying about how you wash. And they had in Jesus' day, they can tell this by reading the Jewish writings of the day and things like that, that they had all kinds of rules about how you washed your hands and how you went about the washing of this hand and then you did this. And they were all so particular about exactly how you washed. And if you didn't do the washing right, then you had to go back and redo it. So they were very zealous, but it wasn't according to knowledge because, and I believe this really is their failure, they went about to establish their own righteousness rather than submitting to God's righteousness. They were going to try to prove. Now, what that did for them, what that caused them to do was to eventually to reject Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ came along, and did he demonstrate what perfect righteousness to the law looked like? Yes, he did. And they knew that he looked so much different than them. In fact, remember one of the criticisms that Jesus says, haven't you read what it says? You guys are so concerned. You guys are so concerned that a person tithes out of their mint and their anise and their cumin. I mean, you guys are so particular that when you tithe, even the smallest things that a person grows, their spices, you want to make sure they tithe out of that because you're so zealous. But he says, you've forgotten the weightier matters of the law, that God wanted to see mercy and justice. And they weren't concerned about mercy and justice. They were just concerned about zealously keeping all his little facets of law. He says, you ought to do this and that. He doesn't say you ought to choose one or the other. He says, you ought to tithe out of the mint and the anise and cumin, but you also ought to be pursuing mercy and justice. And he says, you're not. So that's what happens when Jesus came along and showed them what real righteousness under law was. They didn't like it. They hated him. So we come to Romans 11. Turn to Romans 11 here. And this is their final failure under law. This is really what it came to. Let's go to verse 6. But if it is by grace, it is no longer on the basis of works. Otherwise, grace is no longer grace. What then? That which Israel is seeking for, it has not obtained, but those who were chosen obtained it, and the rest were hardened, just as it is written. God gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes to see not, ears to hear not, down to this very day. And he says, down to this very day, when you really speak these things to them, they don't get it. They can't see it, they can't hear it, their spirit, their cognitive ability doesn't work right. And David said in verse 9, let their table become a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a retribution to them. Let their eyes be darkened to see not and bend their backs forever. And so, and he said then, did they not stumble so as to fall? Now I want to go back up to verse 9 when he's talking about this stumbling. He says, let their table become a snare and a trap. Now that table in the Hebrew that David was referring to was not just, it's not a table like this. It's not the table that you have at home in your dining room or in your kitchen. It was a table. It's a special word that referred to a table that you sent before a king, before royalty, before dignitaries. How should they have received Jesus Christ? As what? As their king. So they should have set before him the king's table. Now, you don't see it here, but over there in Psalm 69, where Paul is quoting about this table that they set before him, what did they feed? What did they set out on the table for their king? Sour wine for drink and well, they put that on a hyssop, but let's go over to
Gall
for my food and wine, sour wine for my drink. Thank you. That's what they gave their kings. That sound like the kind of stuff that you serve a king that comes to sit down? Give him sour wine and gall? But that's what they served him. And that was their rejection. That was the epitome of their rejection of Jesus Christ. When they should have been receiving him as king, they actually set before him a table that showed that they despised this one. And that was where their failure then came. Now, the punishment for that dispensation, if you turn back in your Bibles to the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 9. Now, we were over here in Daniel this morning in chapter 9, if you remember, because Daniel was reading Jeremiah. In Daniel 9 and verse 2, he was reading Jeremiah and he saw that God had determined 70 years for them. Now, he wanted to know when those 70 years were going to come about. He wanted to know how all this was going to take place. And so if you go to verse 24 of Daniel 9, it says, 70 weeks have been declared for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make a covering for perversity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. Has it ever sounded like any of those things have ever happened for Israel? No. Is there an end of sin in Israel? Has there been everlasting righteousness brought into Israel? Not yet. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be seven sets of seven and 62 weeks. Or 62 sets of seven. Now the reason he has seven sevens and 62 weeks of seven is that it will be built again with plaza and moat even in times of distress. Now that's talking about the rebuilding of all those. The rebuilding of the wall, the rebuilding of the temple, the rebuilding of Jerusalem. That was going to take them 49 years to do that. Then he jumps ahead, verse 26, and then after the 62 sets of seven, the second group then, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city. Does everybody understand why he breaks this 70 apart in this way? You get that? This is what he's saying. He says there are 70 sets of seven, and those are 7 years. I know your Bible's translated weeks, but all that word week is the word seven. That's all it is. And sometimes it does mean week, but the Israelites also worked on a 7-year cycle. Wouldn't you like that? All you had to do was put in 6 years on the farm, and your seventh year as a Jew, you took off. You didn't have to raise a crop. That's the way they worked, because they were on a 7 year cycle.
But they never did do that, did they?
Did do it, but eventually they stopped doing it, and that was one of the real reasons that God kicked them out of the land. He says, I'm going to kick them out of the land so the land gets its rest. So think of all the years that they didn't do it. That's one of the reasons they had to be out of the land for all that time. But they did do it for a while. Now this 70 is divided in here into actually three sets. It's divided into 7, and then it's divided into 62. Okay? Now that doesn't make 70. We're one short. We've got another one out here in the future. This one, if we started back here, we have the decree to rebuild. So they go back, and this is going to be, what is this going to be now? 49. It's going to take them 49 years to have everything rebuilt there with regard to the city, the wall. Actually, they went back, remember, they built the temple, then the wall, and then rebuilt the city. And that took them 49 years to do that. So that's what that first reference is. Okay. Then you pick up the next one, and that's from the ending of that until the time that Messiah would be cut off right here at the cross. Okay? So this is the cross. This is when Messiah is cut off, when they rejected him. And it's real interesting when you go back to the decree that was made by Cyrus. When you go back and you calculate those decrees from that date, and then you account for the fact that the Jews had a 360-year calendar rather than a 365-year calendar, day calendar, and you calculate that, it actually comes out to 30 AD, and it comes out to the week that Christ was put on the cross, which would have been, I think it's late March in that particular year. And so it comes out actually quite interesting. But then we still have this one left over, and then this is the one that we're primarily dealing with here, because that's this one right here. Okay, it's this 7 years out here that we call, popularly we call this the tribulation. Okay, but technically it's not a separate dispensation. It's the dispensation of law. It hasn't happened yet. It's Daniel's 70th week, yeah. Okay, so if you look here, in Daniel chapter 9 and verse 26, and then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with the flood. Even to the end, there will be wars, desolations that are determined. So he's telling, so the people of the prince who is to come. Now, who destroyed Jerusalem? The Romans. That tells you who this coming prince is that also is prophesied in here. It tells you that this is one of the reasons that we say the beast is comes of the Romans, because it's the people of the prince who is to come, that coming prince that's being talked about a few times here in Daniel. Verse 27, and he, referring to that prince, will make covenant with many for one period of 7, 1 week. But in the middle of the week, in the middle of that period of 7, 3.5 years, he will put a stop to the sacrifice and the grain offering on the wing of the abominations, or the thing that makes it desolate, or makes it really so horrible that it becomes desolate. Goes on, one who makes desolate or deserted. So he's going to do something so horrible in the temple that it's going to cause the temple to be deserted. What would it take to make the Jews desert their temple? We're just going to throw it out right here. 2 Thessalonians tells you, and Jesus indicates this somewhat in Matthew, but he doesn't explain it to you, that it's the man of lawlessness going in and sitting down on, we would say on the ark, most likely, because it says he sits on the throne of God, on the ark of God, and that's what God's throne was, saying that he is God. And that's going to make that place so abominable, so horrible, that the Jews are going to abandon it. That's what it's going to take to get them to abandon their temple and to leave Jerusalem. One who then makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate. So those last 70 years, these last 70 years are designed to bring this all to an end, or set of 70, total of 490 years, actually, is what it comes down to. Total of 490 years. See if I can... I was just going to try to give you some help here, and I was trying to look for something. Oh, Nehemiah 2:1 is, if you don't have a study Bible, Nehemiah 2:1 is when the decree was made, and that was in 445 B.C. Okay.
So, just real quick here. You have 445 B.C. I'm not going to calculate. You have to do calculations to fix the 70 or the 360-day year or the 365-day year because it makes it different. But if you take out of that, we have to go this way, don't we? If we take out of that, and we have 483, right? 483, and that gives you, that puts this at 38 AD,
the crucifixion of Christ, which isn't right. But I'm showing you how close it comes out, and that's just going off a 365-day year. All you have to do is reorient that to a 360-day year, and it actually corrects those last eight, takes those eight away and puts you at 30 AD. So you can go home and do the math. It's fun. I've done it a couple times, and it's actually not that hard to do, but I'm not going to bore you with all the details sitting right here. Okay.
Wouldn't their seasons get all messed up if they were on a series?
No, because they had a year every once in a while that corrected that. See, and that's what alters all this. Yeah. They had every once in a while, what they do is they'd have a year that would add a whole extra month. They made up, but rather than having leap years like we do that have an extra day, they would eventually, until they had a whole extra month that accounted for it. So.
But if they did that, then the number of years would be there, but the number of days wouldn't. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the thing is because they calculated their years differently, because they calculated by 360-day years, their years were always shorter. So they had, over the space of time, they actually did have more. They had more years than we have by the way they calculated, by the way their calendar rotated and turned around. So, yeah, it's interesting reading to read about how the Jews calculated all this stuff. I've got a few books upstairs if you ever want to borrow them and read about the calculation of these days. Okay, so that's the end of it. So let's just kind of go fill in. Let's fill in our. Who's the steward?
Moses.
Moses is the steward. Who's the household?
Israel.
Israel. Israel after Sinai.
Yeah, Israel from Sinai. Okay. What's the rule? Okay. Actually, and we ought to always say this, keep and do, because that's what God says all the time. God always says keep and do, and that's important because what it does is it actually helps us alter our understanding of the word keep, okay? Because God didn't equate keeping with doing. We do today, okay? So they were to keep and do the law, and then they would have health, wealth, and prosperity in the land. Their failure under the law was
not keeping and doing the law,
or according to Romans,
reject.
Making their own law.
Adding to.
Yeah, I'm going to say they made their own law because he says they established their own righteousness. Okay. Now that doesn't mean that they totally rejected the Old Testament law, but they made their own by, as Stan was saying, by adding to it the very thing God told them not to do. Don't add to this, he said. But they did, so they made their own law. And then that culminated in
rejection of Christ.
Rejection of Christ. Okay? Rejection of Christ. What's the punishment? 70th week of Daniel, which is a time, really a time of, ultimately, the 70th week of Daniel is also called
the time of Jacob's troubles.
Time of Jacob's troubles. And what does troubles mean? There. Remember? Labor pains.
Labor pains, yeah.
Okay. So think of it. The time of Jacob, he says, have you ever seen a man give birth? He says, well, look at that. All the men, they stand with their hands down on their loins, and they all look like they're bent over to give birth. Okay. So Daniel's, I'm just trying to help you understand this, but Daniel's 70th week. Daniel's 70th week is...
And being set aside by God.
I don't know if we fully say that that's the punishment for the dispensation, because see, their dispensation isn't really over yet. It has to be finished out here. So I don't know if I'd fully say that. I think that that has more to do with God's interruption of what he was doing with them to put the body of Christ in there for a period of time. Okay, so I really think that that was another plan. Anyway, that's all the further we're going to go this afternoon, because I think we covered quite a little bit right there. Anybody have any questions or anything you want us to go back and take a look at, or any other thoughts on any of this? No? Okay. Father, we're thankful for the afternoon. We're thankful for our brothers and sisters that would take the time to be here. We're even thankful that you gave to Israel the law, because by their failure, you want us to know and to realize that it doesn't do anybody, us included, any good to go about and set up our own system of righteousness. Because unless we submit to the righteousness that you've set before us, we won't ever achieve what you want. And so we're thankful for that. We're thankful that you have been able to even give us that demonstration through Israel's failure under law. As we have to go our separate ways in the remainder of the afternoon and the responsibilities you have before us this week, help us to do so. Living out the righteousness you've set before us as grace believers today, of loving one another as you have loved us, as your Son has loved us, and that is the righteousness you've set before us. And we're thankful for that then. Amen.